Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined by my colleague, Todd Rosiak. Today on the pod, we are looking at the week that was, the Milwaukee Brewers taking 2 of 3 against Pittsburgh, splitting the first 2 games against Houston. And as we record this, schedules dictate we had to go a little early. Brewers looking, it's looking dubious. They're down 4-1. Early against the Astros. So we'll see. We'll have to just imagine that game has already happened. Todd, that could actually be your take of the week. You could just predict how this game ends, and then we can fact check it immediately. It's going to be like an instant gratification thing. What do you think?
Are you planning on being on this podcast for an hour and a half?
That's a good no. But the people listening on Monday morning, they'll know yeah, whether or not you were correct.
Okay. All right.
At the end of this conversation, I've got a couple Brewers players that have some interviews with. Robert Gasser, the rookie pitcher that we've talked a lot about on this podcast. He made his second start this week. I got a chance to sit down with him. And then also a longer interview with Jared Koenig, a relief pitcher right now with the Brewers, who has a really cool story. Wrote about it actually at jsonline.com from that interview, but you can hear it kind of in full talking about his wild journey. He's been in 5 independent leagues. That was before he was in organized baseball. So he's had a longer journey than most, and wanted to highlight that. So that is coming up at the end of this conversation. But Todd, let's start here. The Milwaukee Brewers, as we record this, Colin Ray, a little bit of a struggle again for him. That was a couple starts in a row now where he has struggled. The Brewers starting pitching, to me, we've talked about it a lot, but I'd be curious your take on it, how you feel, if you feel like they're going to be able to get through a season like this, where it's kind of patchwork. You know, DL Hall had a rehab stint in Wisconsin as we record this on Sunday, so he may be getting closer to a return, but obviously struggled early. Bryce Wilson hasn't been able to get through 5 innings. Freddy Peralta hasn't been able to get deep into games, and yet, even if the Brewers lose this Sunday game, they'll have gone 3-3 on the week. This is a recurring trend. Their record is good. They're first place team in the NL Central, and it feels like they don't even have any starting pitching. So, at this point now, mid to late May, I guess for myself, I kind of have to say, you know, maybe they can do this. Maybe this is sustainable. The relievers have not started to struggle. They are figuring out a way to get through 9 innings. How do you look at what they've got right now going on in the pitching department, and do you think it can continue?
So far, so good. I was thinking that the other day. I mean, if there were a Manager of the Year award through the first 40, 50 games, I would think Pat Murphy would be in the conversation. This is a team that's just had myriad of injuries. As you mentioned, the starting pitching is in tatters. Losing Christian Yelich for a decent amount of time. Now Rhys Hoskins going down with a hamstring strain. He'll be out for a while. And somehow, some way, the Brewers just continue to win more often than not. And it's really been a total team effort. Guys that are filling in the rotation, like the Robert Gassers, are delivering. Bryce Wilson has been pretty good in his time in the rotation. Yelich has come back and is swinging it well. And a lot of these young guys are starting to step up in the lineup. Doesn't hurt when you have a guy like William Contreras playing MVP caliber ball. Guy's been just crazy with how well he's been playing. And then, just kind of doing the little things. Defensively, still been pretty good. You mentioned the bullpen, too. The bullpen has been solid. The question remains, you know, can this keep up for another 3.5 months? And who knows? I mean, that's going to be the question. You get DL Hall back, and he can contribute great. You know, you get some of these other injured guys back. They can contribute great, but we still have a long, long way to go. More probably unforeseen injuries, inconsistency up and down the lineup. It's going to be interesting to watch. But to this point, to see the Brewers in first place and an admittedly weak NL Central, I think probably surprises a lot of people. And hat tip to Pat Murphy and his staff for getting these guys to play well.
I don't know how they're able to constantly create good relievers out of thin air. You know, like Brian Hudson was such an under the radar acquisition. And in fact, they gave up a guy in the 2023 draft that they paid a lot over slot for, a late round draft pick. And it kind of looked like that was a high price to pay for a guy like Brian Hudson. Brian Hudson's been unbelievable and might be, you know, like, I think you could argue the best pitcher in their bullpen this year. I don't even know if that's even that difficult an argument. Trevor McGill's been awesome as well, though. You know, Hobie Milner seems to have rediscovered himself a little bit. They've got, you know, even Koenig, who's, you know, it hasn't been always perfect, but he's been able to contribute and get some high leverage outs. I don't know where they find these guys. And part of me is wondering, you know, maybe they'll just keep finding these guys when, you know, when relievers can't keep up, you know, they struggle or they get hurt or whatever. They'll just make new ones. It seems like that's their ability. I would be worried though about the starting depth. I feel like they've tapped that the resources, the reserves they have. I feel like all those guys are here now. You know, there's some minor leaguers that maybe could make some starts for this team, but I don't know where else they're going to find somebody. And that's why a couple of podcasts ago I talked about a trade. I really feel like this team should be in the market to acquire a starting pitcher. You know, even as Adrian Hauser was struggling for the Mets, you're like, maybe he fits back here, even though he's been horrendous with New York. So I personally think, Todd, that they cannot do this without at least one more starting pitcher for a good chunk of the season. Is that too much? Like, I mean, obviously my eyes have seen it. They're fine without it right now. But do you feel like they have to make a deal at some point or find somebody who can be a starter or not? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how the next couple months go here. Let's see how this team continues to play. If they're in contention, and it looks like this is going to be a team that's going to make a push for the playoffs, one of those wild card spots, maybe even win the division, then absolutely. I talked to Matt Arnold probably 2 weeks ago or so, and just kind of off the cuff asked him what the price for starting pitching was these days, and he just shook his head and said it's not, you know, crazy, you know. So any team that's in the market for starting pitching is going to have to pay through the nose to get it, and teams that have it are not willing to give it up easily. So that's, you know, that's kind of the risk that you run. Depending on what you want, what you get, you're gonna have to give up some top shelf minor league talent or some proven major league talent, and it's not going to be easy. So I think at this point the Brewers just kind of stay the course. They keep their fingers crossed and you know, hope that these guys that are in the rotation continue to pitch well. You know, we'll see guys again like Tobias Myers. I'm sure he'll come back up and get into the mix. Deal Hall, it sounds like when he comes back up, he's going to be in the bullpen to start. And then we'll see what happens with him moving forward. But yeah, there's not a lot of options in the minor leagues. It looks like Aaron Ashby's kind of out of the mix now. And, you know, it looks like it's kind of hoping against hope that he's going to be able to come back and be anything close to what he was, which hurts. Carlos Rodriguez got off to a really bad start this season, pitched a little bit better, but I don't know how legitimate a candidate he would be, to make an appearance or three for the Brewers this year. So I think it's just going to kind of be wait and see, you know, keep the fingers crossed if you're the Brewers, or you keep playing well and then make those decisions as we get closer to the deadline.
Yeah, Aaron Ashby, like you mentioned, ERA of 8.90 in a little over 30 innings at AAA. Something is really wrong there, whether it's just he hasn't fully recovered from the injury or he's just mechanics out of whack. I don't know what it is, but they certainly at this point can't expect him to be back this year. But then again, this is an organization where Corbin Burnes had that 2019 where everything was wrong. And then he came back as obviously better than ever, as good as he has ever been, and became one of the best pitchers in baseball. So can't give up on Ashby yet, but it's looking ugly for this season, whether or not he'll be available. Well, you mentioned it earlier. One of the reasons they've been able to stay afloat is that their offense has delivered. William Contreras in particular is delivering at an MVP level. He had a at-bat for the ages on Saturday, a 13-pitch at-bat against future Hall of Famer Justin Verlander. It ends in a 3-run home run, just a walloped shot to center at Minute Maid Park in Houston, and that was the runs that the Brewers needed for a 4-2 victory in that game. So he's been pretty special. You wrote about him at jsonline.com. I know everybody, you know, has nothing but glowing things to say about him, and why not? I mean, his numbers are outstanding. I really do think he is an MVP candidate. I mean, Shohei Ohtani is probably going to win the MVP at this point, but Contreras has got the Brewers in such a good spot, and he's catching every day, which is wild to me. Not every day, he does DH, but he is playing every day and catching most of it. Do you have any explanation for this? Like, I mean, we know the trade that got him looks like highway robbery. We know he was already a good player. He's just taking a step. But what is it? I mean, everyone raves about it, but like, what is it specifically that has transformed this guy from a really good player to what he is, which is MVP caliber?
I think it's a combination of things. It's, you know, a young guy who's you know, gaining physical maturity. The guy's a beast physically. If you look at him, as I wrote, he looks like an NFL running back the way he's built. It's confidence. You know, he's, as I said before, he's crushing it. And as anybody knows, when you're doing something well, it's just going to build more confidence. You mentioned it too. He's playing every day. You know, that helps breed confidence as well. And he's just a really, really good player who works hard. So all those things are really good ingredients, and they're coming together to make a guy who is an MVP caliber type player. I don't know how sustainable it is to be able to think that he's going to play every single day. The DH does help his argument a little bit, but then you run into that risk of, you know, you got two catchers in the lineup every day, you lose one of them, then what happens? And then you're in a little bit of a bind. But I think for now, they really like what they're getting out of their twosome. Gary Sanchez is what I think everybody expected him to be, which is home run threat, you know, okay defensively, not much else. But, you know, Contreras has just been a terrific story. And the thing I really like about him is he's starting to show his personality a little bit too. This is a guy that you know, was a little bit guarded and closed off his last year in Milwaukee. And I'm sure that had something to do with just kind of getting familiar with his environment and his teammates and the staff and everything. But he's taken some real steps forward in that regard, just from a media standpoint. He's been very friendly to talk to. He's not always relying on a translator. So he is speaking to us some in English, which is a good step forward. And, you know, more jovial. So I think just all around, everything's kind of coming together and helping create what is already one of the better catchers in franchise history. And if he's able to do this over, you know, X number of years, he's definitely going to be in that conversation for, you know, is he the best Brewer catcher ever to suit up? I think that would be a fun conversation to have. Probably Jonathan Lucroy would be in that argument. Yeah. You know, Ted Simmons, of course, a Hall of Famer. His stay here wasn't long, but obviously he was tremendous. You know, so that would kind of be a fun discussion to have as well. But it's he's definitely been a fun player to watch so far.
Yeah, Simmons, he was very important to them getting to the World Series in 1982. His numbers were not great in Milwaukee 3 to 4 years over the time. He was at the end of his career. So statistically speaking, it really is like it's just LaCroix, I think, you know, and there's a longevity thing there where it's not really apples to apples at this point. I guess my concern would be the catching aspect of it. He seems so driven play every day to catch as much as possible. And he's made strides, maybe a little bit of a backslide defensively this year, but still made strides from where he was when he joined this organization. And I can understand that, but we saw that with Prince Fielder too, that it didn't necessarily hurt the Brewers, but it did hurt his career long-term. It did limit what he could do to play every day. And that was just first base. You know, that wasn't catching every day. So I wonder how they're going to navigate that. I mean, obviously he's going to want to, this is who he is. He doesn't like to take days off, and that's fine. And the Brewers don't want him to take days off, but at some point you got to give the guy a day off, right? You got to be able to go to a backup, rest his knees, keep him fresh. Cause you wonder at the end of the year, is he going to be this, or is he going to be worn down after catching 150 games? I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
August 5th. That's what Murphy told us several weeks ago. That was the next day off that he had scheduled that the Brewers were actually going to play, and he wasn't going to be in the lineup. So
August 5th.
Yeah, I'll have to hold him to that. But, no, I think it's legitimate. It's a concern. You don't want to wear the guy down. I think maybe the best comparison that you could look at in recent years would be Yasmani Grandal in 2019. He was kind of the same player of the same mindset where he wanted to be in there every single day. And he pretty much was, whether he was catching, DHing, or playing a little bit of first base too. You know, it didn't really affect his numbers overall. And if you're going to be doing that, you know, now William Contreras is at the age where I guess you maybe can get away with it. I don't think anybody can doubt his conditioning and his physical strength. The guy again is just a monster. So it's going to be one of those things where I think they're going to keep real close eye on him. as the season goes along. And I don't know, maybe they're going to have to, physically restrain him and put him in a straitjacket or something to keep him out of the lineup one day. But nice problem to have, right?
Yeah, it is indeed. He has been awesome. The trade for Esteury Ruiz continues to look like one of the most head scratching. Do you remember that trade? Were you around at all 1980, like following this team as a kid when the Brewers traded for Pete Vukovic, Raleigh Fingers, and Ted Simmons for some guys that were decent, but like clearly the best or one of the best trades in Brewers history? Like, we're getting to that point with this. This is so lopsided. And Esteury Ruiz has been okay at times. I think he's exactly what Oakland thought he was, but just that they involved themselves in a three-way trade and just casually picked up William Contreras, who's already better than Sean Murphy, the guy who was the headliner in that deal, going to Atlanta. Best trade in franchise history. I don't know if I'm ready to say it yet, but it is on the list, Todd.
Yeah, I was talking to Adam McKelvey about that a couple weeks ago when we were at Wrigley Field, and just, if the Braves could rewind the clock, I think there's no question that they would have kept William Contreras and extended him rather than given, Sean Murphy big money. And that's not to say that Murphy's a bad catcher, but, man, Contreras is profiling to be just, an absolute beast for years to come. And, homegrown guy for them and obviously fit in well in that clubhouse. So, I'm sure they're kicking themselves a little bit. Thing about that trade that I don't think anybody can really wrap their minds around is the Brewers gave up Esteury Ruiz. I realized three-team trade. They give up Ruiz and they get William Contreras from the Braves, another minor league pitcher from the Braves, and Piams from the A's. It just doesn't compute. My mind does not allow that to compute, And, yeah. You can see why a team like the A's would want Ruiz. He can be an explosive player, an exciting player. But really, with all the young outfielders the Brewers had coming up, there was no need for him. And, he led the league in stolen bases last year. But aside from that, I couldn't believe I was looking at his stats the other day when I wrote that Contreras story. Since he went to Oakland, he's a minus 20 defensive run saved outfielder.
He's not a good outfielder.
I mean, let that sink in. That like you or me probably could be a minus 20 defensive run saved outfielder. That's how bad that is. So
You've never seen me run. I'd be negative 50, I think.
He would not be a good defensive fit for the Brewers anyway. So
no.
Any way you cut it, any way you slice it, highway robbery by the Brewers.
Got sent down to start the year to AAA by Oakland, and he came back and he was doing really well. He's kind of fallen back to earth since that. He's got a 652 OPS this season. But I mean, I don't mean to cast aspersions on Oakland, but like if you can't crack the opening day line or regular lineup for Oakland, which is basically a land of opportunity right now, I mean, oh man, that's a terrible look. Now again, he's back. He's in the big leagues, but I remember that. I will always remember that trade. As it trickled out, you learn that the Brewers have given up Esteury Ruiz, and it's like, okay, all right, what else? Like, let's hear all the other things that they're giving up to get William Contreras. Because at that point, we knew what the return was. And then to find out that was it, like, that was the deal. That's all they had to sacrifice. And again, no shade to Esteury Ruiz. He's an exciting player. But like you said, he does not fit what the Brewers do, other than he's fast, like everyone else on the team is fast. But defensively, that would not have been a good fit, especially now as they're kind of working in some of that outfield defense with like Sal Frelick and Jackson Churio and trying to get a little bit better in the outfield. That wouldn't have played. He's not a center fielder. He couldn't have played center field here. So where would you have played him? It's a great deal for the Milwaukee Brewers. Always will be, I think, no matter what happens now.
Maybe not to cut you off, but maybe the A's feel a little bit better. They were able to land Lucas Erceg in that minor trade last year. And Erceg is really killing it out of the bullpen this year for the A's, which is, it's a great story. Throwing 100 miles an hour, he's been closing some games. Setup guy with Mason Miller, those are two really high octane arms. It would have been fun to see what he could have done out of the Brewers bullpen, but the Brewers basically made that trade to give Lucas Erceg an opportunity to get to the major leagues, and hat tip to him. We all know about his long personal journey and struggles and all that stuff, so good for him. And I was just looking at the A's statistics here. How about Abraham Toro hitting a cool .299 with four homers and 17 RBIs for the A's too? So they have a couple of ex-Brewers that are producing for them. So not all is lost for the Oakland A's as far as the Brewers are concerned.
No, that is true. Lucas Hersey, great guy too, and it's really cool to see him succeed. Yeah, it would have been nice to have it in addition to all these other arms. And Abraham Toro, I think defensively is the same issue. Like, he couldn't really play a spot. So if he could, I think he would have stayed here and fit here. But so yes, not a total loss for Oakland, but the Brewers will take where they sit. Another great trade in terms of adding an offensive a bat right now is that Corbin Burnes trade, because Joey Ortiz has been tearing the cover off the ball. He's a guy that was in kind of more of a platoon than I think made sense to me after a while as April progressed, because he was seemingly hitting the ball very well. The team seemed really committed to giving Oliver Dunn some opportunities. Oliver Dunn is not a guy who's had a lot of experience at AAA. You know, they were kind of throwing him off the deep end. I think he succeeded pretty well at first, quality defense, good speed. But after a while, it seemed like he was getting a little overmatched by big league pitching. The Brewers make the move this week to send Oliver Dunn down. Now, Pat Murphy said after Wednesday's game that move was more about getting Oliver Dunn those opportunities. And I believe that. That's true. But to me, it's also a vote of confidence that, yes, Joey Ortiz is your starting third baseman. No matter what, no matter righty, lefty, whoever's pitching, it's Joey Ortiz. And he has rewarded that trust, at least initially. He reached base all five times on Wednesday. The first three times on Friday, all five times on Wednesday, three times on Friday in his next game. Hit the only ball against Josh Hader that was well struck in making that first out in nine plate appearances. He looks really, really good, Todd. I feel like I think they really struck gold here. I think he might be a lot better than anyone thought he was going to be offensively, and defensively he's pretty good. Probably too early to make that call, but I'm feeling very, very positive about Joey Ortiz at this point. How do you feel?
Yeah, it was interesting to see that third base position kind of shake out in the early portion of the season and what ultimately happened. And Oliver Dunn, he's got some good tools, and you can see why the Brewers like him. Left-handed hitter, got a little bit of pop, good bat speed. He was much better defensively at third base than I think maybe anybody was expecting, and that was kind of Joey Ortiz's calling card. And not to say that he hasn't done a good job over there defensively, but he's starting to look like he could be the run producer kind of player that the Brewers would love, or any team would love at third base. You know, I'm just looking at his stats here now. I think this is while the Brewer game is going on here on Sunday. 291 average, 5 homers, 15 RBI, 932 OPS. One of the things that jumps out to me is 16 walks, 20 strikeouts. So, you know, he's got some pop, but he's also really good at making contact, and he will also take his walks as well. It's a guy that you definitely can build on moving forward. Now, let's see in a year where he's at. I think everybody's kind of expecting him once Willy Adames moves on, assuming that he does. I think everybody's looking at Joey Ortiz as the heir apparent there at shortstop, but who knows? I mean, maybe he winds up hitting 20 home runs and they like him better. They think he profiles better at third base. Who knows? Again, it's a nice problem to have, but who would have thought 2 months into the season now that we'd be talking about Joey Ortiz being the major contributor out of that Burnes trade? And the question mark right now is DL Hall. I don't think anybody foresaw that. And it's certainly not to say that DL Hall is, you know, burnt out or he's not going to contribute or anything like that. But he's obviously got to round back into form after that, that sprained knee. And we'll see what he does. But Joey Ortiz has definitely been an exciting player. And he's one of those guys to me where when he comes to the plate, you want to watch what he does, because he does have some pop for a littler guy. Makes good contact. He's just one of those kind of exciting players to me. So hats off again to the Brewer front office for being able to get him in that deal.
Just as we're recording this, William Contreras almost hit a game-tying 3-run homer in the fifth. So, unfortunately, it's a loud out, and the Brewers go down. So they're still down 4-1 midway through the game. I'm going to keep providing updates. Everyone loves live updates from something that already happened hours or days ago as they're listening on their podcast. So,
I don't.
I know you don't. The Joey Ortiz has been great, and I don't. You mentioned Willy Adames, like, or shortstop of the future. Like, Willy Adames has been solid and is still a really, really good defensive player. But at this point, you know, it feels like they are prepared to say goodbye. And whether that means he gets traded at the deadline or not, I don't know. I think it kind of does, though. I think that he'll probably be a guy who's available at the deadline, even if the Brewers are still in first place and even if they're pushing for a playoff spot. I feel like they could probably get the things they need, even if it means taking a slight step back. I don't know if it'd be a slight step back offensively. That's a really interesting one, and I'm definitely going to keep my eye on it as that as the season progresses, because that's going to be a really interesting question mark facing them as July, you know, transpires here. We mentioned it much earlier on in this podcast, but Reese Hoskins getting injured is definitely a minus for this offense. He had been hitting the ball quite nicely. He, of course, hit a big three-run homer last week in a win over the St. Louis Cardinals. That was pretty exciting. But he gets hurt, hamstring issue early on this week, and he's going to be out for what we believe to be 2 to 4 weeks. I think Jake Bowers is hitting the ball very well, hit the ball really hard this week. So, you know, you could say that maybe they're making up some of that lost offense by having Jake Bowers at the peak of, you know, the peak of his powers right now. But that is a tough one. I think when you bring in a player with a little bit of health question marks, you have to assume that, or at that age, you have to assume you're going to miss some time. But I think it's okay for now. I guess if this goes on for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, you know, beyond the sort of projected timeline, I do think it could end up hurting them. What are your thoughts on how the Brewers overcome losing Reese Hoskins?
Yeah, the Bowers acquisition obviously looms much larger now. And all the people who early in the season were, you know, wailing and gnashing their teeth about, oh, this guy's terrible, this, that, and the other. I mean, it looks like a pretty good acquisition at this point. Now, granted, he's only hitting 228, but he's shown some pop. He's driving in some runs, and defensively, he's been tremendous. So he gets you through. He kind of gets you through the lurch. He'll be out there most days, I think. You know, once in a great while, you'll see a guy like Gary Sanchez over there. But you know, it's just kind of been the MO of this team this so far this season is working around injuries to key players and still finding a way to win. I think it's going to stink. It looks like, it, barring some kind of miraculous recovery, Reese Hoskins is probably going to miss that series in Philadelphia now, yeah. Which I know a lot of Phillies fans were tweeting me after, you know, he got hurt that night, saying how disappointed they were that that's a possibility. Would not surprise me to see him go on that trip anyway. And you got to hope that he does, but that would have been a pretty cool moment to see him back there and, you know, get his flowers, so to speak. But, you know, otherwise, I think it's just going to have to be business as usual for this team. Keep trying to find ways to win like they have been and keep your fingers crossed that, you know, Reese Hoskins is able to recuperate relatively quickly and get back to the way he was swinging it when he got hurt.
Brewers are in the midst of a really long road trip here. Three city, not a lot of trips like this. This is, I think, the only one that goes three cities this year. So after Houston, they go to Miami. You'll be on that trip, Miami to Boston, and then back home for Memorial Day, and the Chicago Cubs come to town. Give me your thoughts on the NL Central right now, because it obviously looks like a two-team race, and it looks like the Cubs are going to be that other team. And I still think the Cubs look a little better than the Brewers, but, I mean, some of that I think is just going to come down to who has the healthier guys at the end of the year. Do you see it as such? Would you count out the Reds or even the Pirates or Cardinals at this point? I mean, the NL Central is kind of weak across the board. A week maybe too strong, but like there's parity. Like the Cardinals are still not far off of a playoff spot, even if they're well back in the Central. How do you see this division shaking out as we get closer to a big Cubs clash?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, the Pirates, what they have working for them is their young starting pitching. Now, yeah. Can it step up as the season progresses and the games start to get a little bit more important? Time will tell, but man, they've got some real studs coming up between Jared Jones, Skeens, you know, even some of these guys like Falter and Priester look mm-hmm. pretty good. So this is a team that's got some starting pitching that is going to need to be reckoned with in the years to come. This year, probably not, though, you know, in terms of competing. Cardinals, I know not that many people are upset about seeing them struggle again. There may be some upheaval there before too long. They're just not able to get it together. To me, the biggest surprise has been the Cincinnati Reds. This is a team that I think most people had pegged to be one of the favorites to win the division, and here they are in last place. Their offense has just been putrid. Their pitching has been not very good either. Aside from Ellie De La Cruz, they've just totally underperformed. And you got to wonder if you know, they'd be looking at a potential managerial change or something like that. But at the top of the standings, you have the Brewers and the Cubs. And the Cubs, to me, I agree with you. I just feel like they're probably built better for the long haul. And they also have had a ton of injuries. We give Pat Murphy credit for getting the Brewers through theirs. You got to give Craig Counsell credit as well for getting the Cubs through theirs. And once they get everybody back and healthy, they're going to be formidable. You also have to figure that they're going to be in the market to be making some moves. They've got pieces to trade as well. So it's going to be fun to watch these two teams, assuming they're, you know, they remain in it, kind of going neck and neck down the stretch. I will be missing that first game in Milwaukee, the first couple games when the Cubs come to town, but I'll be following from afar. I'm sure Craig Counsell will be welcomed warmly by the Brewer faithful. JR, maybe you'll be there. You can fill me in as well. But those games should definitely be fun.
I am sure Brewers fans will warmly react. Very, very excited for him. Congratulatory and all of that. It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun on a holiday, no less, where everybody is going to be partying. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, let's go into some of the more granular details from the week, as we do every week. Here it is, 3 up, 3 down. Would you like to start, Todd?
No, you fire away.
All right, I will fire away. We did get to see the second outing for Robert Gasser. He had that exciting first start against the Cardinals last weekend. This week it's against the Pirates on a day game. 5 very nice innings. Once again, he allows a run on a sacrifice fly. It wasn't as smooth, I would say, as the 6 innings against St. Louis. He did, he did allow a fair number of base runners, but he is able to get the job done and just looks really poised, really, really solid out there. He is going to give up runs. He's going to give up, he's going to have bad outings. He's not one of the 5 best, prospect pitchers in baseball, but he's a guy who I think is going to be here for the rest of the year. I mean, barring injury, I think he's a guy that they have to have in the rotation, and they're going to need a lot from him. So I was really excited to get to talk to him again. That interview is coming up at the end of this conversation. He's an easy guy to talk to, and it definitely is ready for this moment. It seems the results have backed that up. So another good outing for him, seeing him in Miami as well. So an important another step forward for the left-hander Robert Gasser.
How about Josh Hader coming in on Friday and shutting the Brewers down? It's obviously he's been gone now for almost 2 years, but it still is weird not seeing him in a Brewer uniform and not seeing him close down games for the Brewers. But his numbers have not been the greatest with Houston. That'll equalize, and he'll wind up being one of the best closers in baseball like usual. But he was able to lock down a save against his former team. I think that's a save against all 30 teams now for his personal records in his career. So hats off to him. And it's also interesting to see him be willing to pitch in multiple inning roles and do different things other than just close games. He got some well-earned derision, I would say, from what he had to say while pitching for the Padres, and that he just wasn't going to do that because he wasn't going to sacrifice his arm and potentially hurt the big deal that he wound up getting with the Astros. It might have been better served to not say that publicly, but he's since moved on, and it looks like everybody's happy with him in Houston, and kudos to him.
Yeah, we could – at some point I'd love to have a bigger conversation about those comments that meant that point of view, because while he's going to get heat for that, essentially saying I'm putting my career, my long-term career ahead of the short-term results, that's what the system makes these guys do, essentially. It basically makes them choose. They have to choose to continue to be workhorses for their team and work multiple innings, even though the arbitration system, which was always his contention, doesn't reward that level of availability. It rewards saves. It rewards stats. So he was looking out. I mean, he was trying to help the Brewers win games. I think it'd be unfair to say that otherwise, or the Padres win games, but he felt like he needed to do what the system wanted him to do to benefit him the most. So I don't know. It also seemed like he started this year kind of just doing the 9th inning for the Astros as well after that contract, although he has since said he'd be willing to do more. But that's just a weird quirk about baseball. And to this point, I don't know if anybody else has really done it like Josh Hader has. You're right. He probably would have been better served saying nothing, but it's also worth pointing out that the system has created this. So I don't know who's ultimately to blame there, but Josh Hader definitely, he still got paid. He still got paid, and he does get that save for the Brewers. I would have loved to have seen Jackson Churio face him, or Pat Murphy leave Bryce Turang in, even that's lefty lefty instead of Owen Miller. Bryce Turang hitting, you know, making contact with everything. I would have loved to have seen that, and then maybe get a chance for William Contreras. That would have been a heck of a matchup. But Astros win that game by one run. Josh Hader does his job. Okay, sorry for that side tangent. What else do we have from this week? We had the Sal Frelick game on Tuesday against the Pirates, and then quite honestly, it was really quite good again the day after that. There were two Sal Frelick games back to back. Games for a player who really, really needed it. It has been a struggle, even as I'm watching this game here against the Astros. Frelick's defense just doesn't seem to get a good jump on the ball in the outfield, and that has been sort of a recurring issue. That has been the case here in Houston. I also think it's just, I mean, offensively, he just hasn't been there. His numbers have been way down there. And then Tuesday, he really breaks out. He hits the home run. He's got two diving catches, one of which was absolutely insane in center field, just a crazy catch. You could maybe argue the jump wasn't great there either, but he made the catch and saved the Brewers some runs there. And then Wednesday he homers yet again. So really nice to see him turn the corner. The Brewers need him. They need him offensively. They need him or Weimer or Garrett Mitchell to get healthy. Like, they need those guys to step up. They don't have other guys waiting in the wings. They need those guys. So it was nice to see Sal Frelick get off the schneid a little bit and have a nice week.
Yeah, you mentioned Garrett Mitchell. I had a nice chat with him last week, and he was awaiting word on his latest x-ray to see how his finger is healing. Assuming that it is fully healed or really close to it, he's getting very close to being able to start swinging a bat in earnest and start taking batting practice and all those sorts of things. I would imagine the Brewers will want him to go out on a minor league rehab assignment, but we're probably within, I'm just guessing, 2 weeks of a return for him, maybe a little bit less than that. And then you'd enter another talented young outfielder into that equation in the outfield. And, you know, not a moment too soon. It's another exciting guy, another good defender, got some pop in that left-handed bat. He can steal some bases. So he gives his return, and obviously assuming that he's going to be healthy and productive, that gives Pat Murphy even more, possibilities in terms of combinations out there in the outfield. Then that will also leave a kind of an odd man out. You wonder who that's going to be, but the more the merrier, the more talent you have, the better off you're going to be.
All right, I'll close it down. Brian Hudson. I wrote down Brian Hudson all-star ? I don't think that's going to be the case, but two more clean innings from the left-hander on Tuesday. Had another nice outing on Saturday where he got into some trouble and worked out of it. You just can't say enough about what he's been able to do. The 6'8 left-hander is just dealing. I mean, he's worked his way into kind of this almost now de facto setup role, or at least high leverage as you can get, especially if left-handers are involved. Just nobody can get comfortable against him. He does not throw hard. He throws 91, but he just carves guys up. And I mean, you look at what the Cubs starter Shoto Imanaga is doing right now. He's obviously the way out front runner for Rookie of the Year at this point. He kind of does the same thing. He carves people up with 91 mile speed, maybe out, Todd. I don't know. Maybe speed is moving out of vogue, but the Brewers obviously got a steal here with Hudson, trading him for a 18th round, 19th round draft pick last year. Again, a decently regarded player in Justin Chambers, but paying immediate dividends on the big league level. And I am very curious to know how this bullpen ultimately shakes out. Like, when Devin Williams is healthy, and he started playing catch this week, so it's still probably not going to be until like the end of July. But if Devin Williams is healthy, if they decide to bring up, say, Jacob Mizorowski, you know, where does Trevor McGill fit into that picture? Where does Brian Hudson figure? Like, I'd love to know, if they get closer to the playoffs, who the 7, 8, 9 guys are. I think it could be any number of people at this point. That's obviously a nice luxury to have. And Brian Hudson's been really special. So they are very fortunate right now with him.
And we're forgetting Abner Uribe.
Oh my gosh, we sure are. Abner Uribe. He's been great since they sent him back down to AAA. They got to figure out what to do with him too.
Yeah, so you figure he'll probably be back up sooner rather than later, I would think. But I'm guessing that they wanted him down there to not only refine his stuff, but gain a little bit of maturity. You know, we all remember that brawl and, you know, gesturing on the mound and all that stuff. And doesn't go over real well in the major leagues most times. So I think he's got to get a little bit more. He's got to do a little bit more before he can be doing that kind of stuff. But my third would be just a conversation I had last week with Wade Miley, catching up with him and talking about the reconstruction of his UCL. It's pretty remarkable. He's going to be 38 next year, and he thinks he's going to be ready for spring training, ready to be throwing to hitters. You know, who knows if it'll be with the Brewers. My guess is it'll have to be some kind of showcase or something like that, like Zach Greinke has done. I think he just did one this past week, actually, in Arizona. But he's, I think, cautiously optimistic that he can resume his career, and what a story that would be if he could. Hopefully with the Brewers, selfishly, the guy's terrific to deal with, fun guy in the clubhouse, fun to watch pitch. Once the baseball's over for him playing, he made no bones about it. He wants to coach. And I think as media members, we could maybe chip in a little bit of our paltry salaries to bring him to Milwaukee, because what a terrific addition he would be to the coaching staff. In the meantime, he's just kind of been hanging out around the team, providing guidance where he can, some levity, and he's even jumping in to Pat Murphy's pregame media sessions with reporters, which is fun. Because he adds his two cents, and sometimes they're pretty funny. So just a good little update from him, and hopefully his healing continues to go well.
Reminds me a little of Stephen Vogt in terms of just how popular he is, how easy he is to talk to. And obviously Stephen Vogt has now transitioned to a immediate head manager role with Cleveland. So I don't know if I would see Wade Miley doing it quite that way, but I could see him working out great as a coach, manager, whatever. He's a fun time. We have expressed our love for Wade Miley before. Here are things we did not talk about in 3 Up, 3 Down. Jake Bauer's grand slam on Monday. Don't want to let that go unremarked upon. That's part of his hard hit festival of late, where he's really seeing the ball well. That grand slam was nice. They lost that game, but just a laser beam out. And then he had another bomb in Houston. My goodness, just an absolute bomb. Our guy Wes Clark is up to AAA. Speaking of mashers, guys who are in the minor leagues, Kurt Hoge famously predicting on this podcast that Wes Clark would hit as many as 10 home runs for the Brewers for the Brewers this season in 2024. Still don't think that's going to happen, but Wes Clark one step closer and already homering at the AAA level. Jacob Mizorowski's been a little up and down still with the walks in the minors. He's not really able to go deep into his starts. He walked 5 more guys in 3 1/3 innings this week for Biloxi. I still think maybe you're going to see him as a reliever, and maybe it's going to be I don't know about him starting. I feel like there's a lot more work to be done to get him to that level as a starter. So I don't know. Bruce hit 5 home runs on Wednesday against the Pirates, 5 different players hitting home runs, including Jackson Churio, who hit a real bomb. Joey Ortiz had one in that game. And I think that's it. That's what we got for 3 Up, 3 Down. Okay, let's go back in time just a little bit. We're not going very far this week. It is our weekly historical Brewers segment. It is Remember When. All right, Todd, I'm only going back to 2018. After watching William Contreras homer on the 13th pitch of an at-bat against Justin Verlander, I'm going back to 2018. Do you know, Todd, who I am going to be discussing today?
No idea.
No idea. It's Jesus Aguilar. Jesus Aguilar, who once homered on the 13th pitch of an at-bat against the Miami Marlins. It was a walk-off home run. This is April 21st, 2018, off Junichi Tozawa. You can see the whole at-bat in a video, by the way. You'll appreciate this, Todd. The video is more than 9 minutes long. That at-bat from start to finish was more than 9 minutes long. Can you imagine a 9-minute at-bat this day and age in the pitch clock era? I mean, those don't happen anymore, so... Fortunately for all of us, Todd Rozek included, they have implemented the pitch clock, and that doesn't happen anymore. But this is a 13-pitch walk-off home run. It was the first home run Jesus Aguilar hit with the Milwaukee Brewers. I had forgotten about that. He only homered once. That's a guy who hit 35 home runs in 2018, and he only homered one time in April. So that tells you how hot he got the rest of the year. Todd, you are going to love some of the names in this game. This was, again, a win over the Marlins. It was the Brewers won 6-5. Lewis Brinson hit a 3-run homer in this game for the Marlins. Of course, this is post-Yelich trade. Brinson had homered twice in the first game of the series, and then 2 games later hit a 3-run homer. So he was destroying the Brewers. Poor Lewis Brinson did not hit many home runs at the big league level, but he hit all of them in this series. And so he was tearing it up. Brewers still won both of those games. Who else? Brian Anderson, a future Brewer, had an RBI for the Marlins to give them a 2-run lead in this game. Brinson, by the way, had been batting 131 with no extra base hits coming into the series before he hit those 3 home runs. Brewers were also playing future Brewers starter Jose Urena. I don't actually know how to pronounce that name quite right. And they were able to chip away. That's right. That's what I'm saying. Future Brewer himself. So lots of names here. The Brewers were in deep trouble. They were going to lose 5-4, or at least in the eighth. Eric Sogard popped out, which should have been the last out of the inning. But Derek Dietrich of the Marlins, there was some confusion on the between the infield and the outfield. They dropped the ball. That allowed the tying run to score. But they throw out Eric Thames at the plate to keep the game tied. And then that set the stage in the ninth where Aguilar homers against Tuzawa. There was some controversy. Thought maybe it hit that Toyota territory truck. It did not, but it looked like it did. So there was some confusion about whether they'd be giving away a truck or not. You know, going into that season, we forget how Jesus Aguilar, it didn't look like he was going to make the team. In fact, you and Tom Hodricourt did your 1 through 25 ranking of that roster, as you always do. And Aguilar was 24th out of 25. This was a 25-man roster. Only J.J. Hoover, who appeared in two games as a relief pitcher for the Brewers and gave up like three runs in an inning and a third, was ranked below him. Jet Bandy was ranked ahead of him. Oliver Drake was ranked ahead of him. Jacob Barnes was pretty solid, ranked ahead of him. Because they had so many first basemen. You know, they had Eric Thames. Ryan Braun was playing first base. People forget that in 2018 against left-handed pitchers. There was no room for Aguilar. They even kept G-Man Choi. So they basically had four first basemen to open the season. Choi was sent down pretty quickly. They stuck with Aguilar. He hit very well in his opportunities and then, of course, became a starter. And that 13-pitch at-bat was pretty epic. And that is certainly something I was thinking about when I watched William Contreras do the same thing on Saturday. All right, that's Remember When. Let's close it down the way we do every week, and that is with Todd's Take of the Week.
Before we do that, I was going to quiz you. Jose Urania is still pitching in the major leagues. Can you tell me for who?
I can't. He's been with Detroit at some point. I don't know if that was before or after the Brewers. He was with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, maybe? I don't know. You're going to have to tell me now.
He's starting games for the Texas Rangers.
He is not. Reigning World Series champion Texas Rangers.
He went 6 2/3 innings on May 12th, and he just went 6 innings last night.
No kidding.
4 hits, one run.
This is like when we found out Paulo Espino was still in the league years and years later.
Yeah.
Good for him. I don't know how he's managed to do it. He was not very effective in Milwaukee, and I don't know. You know, some guys just hang on. They figure out a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if this is so much a take of the week, but this is something to look forward to in the coming week. Sal Frelick going back home to Boston. I think he's getting a chance to play at Fenway Park for the first time in his career. Obviously in his career, but maybe for the first time in his life, I would assume. I don't know if he ever played there like in high school or something like that, but I'm looking forward to getting down to Miami and talking to him a little bit about, you know, that what he thinks that experience is going to be like. I would assume he's going to have a ton of family and friends there. What better way to kind of help get yourself back on track than a big 3-game series against the Red Sox in your hometown, right? So I think that's something definitely to put on the calendar and maybe some appointment viewing for Brewers fans.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Maybe some high school showcase or something. But he is very Boston, as many people know. If they've heard him talk, they know he's very Boston. So this is a cool opportunity. And, you know, maybe he can, like, go oppo, pepper some Green Monster shots. I could see that working out for him. Crazy outfield to navigate. That's got to be a really tough outfield to play. I don't know how anybody does it. You got the pesky pole and the Green Monster. It's a wild time. All right, Todd, anything else? Anything else you got cooking at jsonline.com before I let you go?
Well, Kurt's been in Houston, so not a whole lot going on Brewers-wise. I just wrote a nice UWM basketball story. If anybody wants to check that out online on Monday morning, you're more than welcome to do so. Panthers are really excited about this coming season already. Huge recruiting class. Bart Lundy pumped. Other than that, I'll be heading down to Miami in the morning, and we'll have all kinds of great Brewers coverage coming your way from Miami and Boston.
The Horizon League is going to be a little more high visibility than it previously was, thanks to the UWGB team hiring Doug Gottlieb. That's going to be interesting. I'm sure the Milwaukee GB rivalry will be ramped up just a little bit because of that.
Oh yeah.
So that'll be interesting. Kurt also with the story about Ben Sheets looking back 20 years ago in his 18 strikeout game against the Atlanta Braves. He sat down with Sheets. Basically, they watched the game together, and I thought that was kind of cool. That's at jsonline.com right now, so you could check that out. All right, we're done here. I'm going to give you my interviews here with Robert Gasser and Jared Koenig. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Microbrew. Thank you, Todd. We will chat with you again very soon.
Always a pleasure, JR.
My guest is Robert Gasser. New starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. I want to start actually with your name. It is Gasser, not Gosser, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, because the I don't know if you're familiar with the Wisconsin Badgers point guard who led them to the Final Four, Josh Gosser, spelled the same, very confusing, but it is Gasser, so that is perfect. Okay, Oak Ridge High School is where you started out. Ian Book, was he in your class or a year behind you?
He was a year ahead of me.
A year ahead of you. Okay, yeah. Do you know him?
We're not really great friends. I wasn't necessarily on the football team or anything.
Oh, you were not on the football team. No. Okay, yes. He, of course, went to Notre Dame to be quarterback at Notre Dame. I did see on your college bio that you were in the bass fishing club in high school.
Yeah, I don't know why I put that in there. It's been following me for a while. I do enjoy fishing, but I'm not. Yeah,
that was my freshman year,
and I was like, I'll just put it in, but next thing you know, it's following me around.
Oh, no, yes. That's very funny. Were you successful, at least? Did you win any trophies or not so much?
No, not at
that
all.
That has followed you around. That's very funny. Can you just describe going, you know, your year at New Mexico, kind of what happened, if you kind of went to the junior college route of your own volition, or that was just because results weren't there, like how that all developed for you?
Yeah, you know, obviously went to New Mexico my freshman year, and it just really wasn't a great fit. Really tough place to pitch, you know, you're a mile high, so that didn't help. I just thought there was, you know, better opportunities for me out there. And at the time, you know, you couldn't transfer 4-year to 4-year without sitting out.
That's right.
So I had opportunities to do that, but chose to go to junior college to play. I'd heard about Delta College for a long time. My my coach growing up, his brother was the assistant coach there, so I had a connection and you know, went there, had some buddies that I knew. One of my good friends growing up went there, so you know, I just thought it was a good fit.
Yeah. Did you have any connections to Houston at that point? Was it somebody at the junior college that hooked you up?
Or? No, honestly, I kind of wanted to go further east, like I guess the South, play ball. You know, California college baseball doesn't get really looked at the same as it does in the South. Just, I don't know why, but that was just my opinion at the time.
Yeah,
so
no, okay.
I wanted to go there and test my luck.
And that's excellent. So was there one person who helped you turn it around, or was it just experience? Like, I mean, obviously something clicked at some point, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had bad stints my freshman year and I had good stints, but you know, I think it was just being, you know, immaturity levels, just handling failure. I was still learning how to do that. Especially at the college level, you know, that's kind of where the game starts to turn a little bit, but, so I just thought, you know, development wise, mentally and physically, I just needed to.
Houston as a basketball team, the NCAA tournament. That's a bummer, man.
I know. I feel like every year I was there, they were doing a really good stuff, but yeah, it's tough to win that tournament.
Yeah. When you hear – this is a question you've been asked, some variation of a lot. When you hear the name Josh Hader, does that mean – how does that matter to you? Like, what do you think about when you think of Josh Hader?
I mean, I don't really try to tie myself too much to him. You know, obviously, was traded for him. I'm the last remaining player from the trade here. Obviously, we got Contreras out of it.
Yeah.
But, no, I don't really – try to tie us together. You know, we're
right.
He's doing his thing. You know, I was really pumped to be able to get traded to this team. You know, I felt like, you know, when you get traded, it means the team sees value in you and wants to use you. So, you know, I was glad. I got traded, and you know, being in AAA the end of that year was great too. Just because, you know, I was able to knew that, you know, that was where I was going to be until, you know, I'm here. So
yeah.
Had a really good coaching staff there that helped me a ton.
Does it change anything that they did get Contreras? I mean, that definitely changes the trajectory of that trade pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you look at it initially, it's, you know, you got two guys that, you know, you had one DFA guy, one guy leave the next year, and then, you know, Ruiz is here, but, you know, now he's in Oakland. So, yeah, definitely helped.
How many times over the last, I guess, year in Nashville, how many times did you think you were getting the call? Were there false alarms in your mind or moments where you thought it's got to be now and it just didn't materialize for whatever reason?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was a stretch in the middle of the year where I was throwing the ball really well. You know, felt like I was going six every single time out. And, you know, that's what you have to do when you get here. But, you know, obviously there's always still room to grow and develop. And, you know, something I kind of had to swallow a little bit and realize, you know, it's not my time. And, that, you know, it'll come. You know, sometimes it's not about when you're ready. It's about when the team needs you. So, you know, I just had to keep going about my business and, you know, glad I'm here now.
You have any hot spots in Nashville that you prefer, 2 to 3, like tourism spots that you really like?
No, I didn't get out a whole lot. Sure. Yeah, our team housing at the time was like 20, 30 minutes away from the field. So I was to and from mainly, but now they actually have a really, really great apartment complex right next to the field.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Nashville's hockey team, their minor league team is Milwaukee, which is the inverse of the baseball team. I don't know if you ever got to a Predators game or whatever, but
no, I did hear about that. Actually a couple days ago. That it's pretty funny that it's like flip-flop.
It is strange. I do want to talk about your debut a little bit. If a couple days, you know, this, I think it's been 3 days since as we record this. Any like what visuals stick out? I assume you have a ball or some sort of memorabilia from this game. I'm just curious, kind of what you've taken away from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome that I was able to go out there my first time and pitch well. But you know, I'm honestly at the end of the day, like, you know, I threw my bullpen today. I'm in preparation mode for my next start. You know, I had to, you know, after the game, started some of my family and stuff, went back to my room at the end of the night, and, you know, I rewatched my outing, you know. I have to. Yeah, you know, it was great. I was able, you know, to enjoy it in the moment. And then the next day, you know, it felt like, all right, show up and you gotta get back to work.
Yeah, the Bryce Turang double play in the second. I mean, that, I don't know if that mattered to you in the moment as much as it felt like, oh man, this is, you know, that's a really big moment early. It felt like that would snowball confidence a little bit. Maybe not. I don't
know. Yeah, I saw that happen and I got a really big smile. And like, that was in the moment where I was kind of like, looked around, I was like, that was like, this is sick. Like, you know, this is the big leagues. You know, I got Bryce is insane at defense behind me, and then Contreras is catching me, and it's he's him. So,
Last one, nickname wise, the name Gasser lends itself to that. What is? Do you have a preference? My colleague Kurt and I tried to make Slideshow Bob happen. I don't think that's going to happen, but to go with the slider. What have you been called over the years that has worked for you?
I've got endless nicknames.
Oh yes,
Gas. Obviously, that's always kind of gets used. Bob. Bob works, Bob Gas, Bobby Gas. So
the whole litany.
You ever feel like everywhere I go, there's, you know,
someone's trying something.
It gravitates towards something else, but anything works.
All right. Thank you so much, Robert Gas. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
My guest is Jared Koenig, relief pitcher, left-handed relief pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm going to start by reading a list of the mascots of the teams that you have played for before affiliated ball. I want you to tell me if you have a favorite here. We got the Vaquero, the Monarchs, the Amberjacks, the Stockade, Pacifics, Beavers, Otters, Crushers, and Tuatara. So what sticks out there? Anything jump out to you?
I mean, the Tuatara was always really cool.
Yeah.
I thought that was a unique one that I had with the Aquaman Tuatara. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And then I always liked the Otters being from the Bay or like Monterey Bay and going there as my final school for indie ball and all that. I like the Otters a lot.
I do want to find out more about New Zealand for sure, but just in general, when you were bouncing from indie ball opportunity to indie ball opportunity, how did you find those gigs? Did you have somebody helping you out? Did you have an agent helping you out? Like, how did that work for you?
No agent. Okay. For the first one, it was actually my high school teammate, Logan Trowbridge. My dad, I think, ran into his mom at the grocery store or something.
Okay.
Mentioned how he was playing with, or he was signed with the Birmingham Bluefield Beavers.
Okay.
And in the USPBL, and so I reached out to Logan to see if I could get an invite. He sent my info to the coach.
Okay.
And asked for some video, sent him some video, and then I got a spring training invite, like their spring training. And with that, I was there, and that was at 17. And I was there, I think it was early April when we reported, early May when we reported.
Okay.
And I was there for that. And then end of April. Now I'm thinking about it. End of April.
Okay.
I was there, reported, and then I made the team. I was a bullpen guy to start. And then I didn't do that great for what they wanted, which was a lefty specialist. And time wasn't my gig.
Okay.
And so then I got released after a month. The next one, I just was after I got released, I was looking to play somewhere else. The Pecos League worked. I actually reached out to my old coach, high school pitching, one of my pitching coaches, Mark Eichhorn.
Oh, yeah. Former big leaguer, right?
Yeah, former big leaguer. Okay. Who's always been in my reach and to be able to talk to and get help from. And he called the owner of the league, he would call for the Pecos League, and he got me on the Amberjacks. And then from there, it kind of just kind of trickled down.
Sure, it makes
Everything
sense.
Everything else was just me doing my thing. There was no real reach out from from myself. It was either coaches calling. It was either the coach that I got released. They or the owner. They called the next team and recommended me to that team.
Okay. Yeah. Like any job, you know, you could bounce place to place.
Yeah.
I wonder. It's ironic that going to New Zealand ended up being the opportunity that got you seen by somebody with Major League Baseball. But how did that come about? Did you feel like you were getting further away from Major League Baseball at that point? Or I mean, that's not what happened. But how would you describe that?
I was looking to go enjoy my time in baseball and going to try and find other places to go and experience the world. That was my kind of goal. And if I didn't get signed to the ABL team that I did, then I would have gone to Australia and played for a club ball team with a chance to make the an ABL team.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But luckily...
So nothing was guaranteed.
Yeah, luckily my teammate was in contact with two teams, the Tuatara, which I ended up signing with, and he was talking to Melbourne. He ended up deciding to go to Melbourne, and then I told him to give my info to DJ Carrasco. And
okay, another former big leaguer.
Another former big leaguer.
Yes.
And he reached out, looked at my stuff, talked to me, wanted to find out who I was, I think, and then he's like, yeah, this is the guy we want. And so he signed me, fortunately, and then from there, did my job there and got the opportunity.
Would you have stayed in Australia / New Zealand if you could, or was that just going to be temporary?
I think it was temporary. I do love New Zealand.
Yeah.
I love the people. The culture there was amazing. Everyone treated me so well. I really do like that and miss it. And I'm looking forward to going back there when I get the chance.
Yeah. I've heard that the animals in that part of the world, they can all kill you, so I may not be as interested as you are in that area.
New Zealand has nothing that...
Nothing like Australia.
Only Australia has everything that can
kill you. So it's so different.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
I'm sure you've been asked if there were moments you almost walked away or wanted to walk away. It doesn't... I don't know if I get that vibe, but it felt like you were playing a game you loved and that was cool, but...
Yeah. No, there was times where I was debating it. I did the police officer test in California.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Just to start planning, prepping, I did that. I did really well on it, but then I had a really good 19 season and then I had an 18 season and I had a good gig to start for 19 before I got traded to the Crushers before spring training for the Milkmen.
Yeah.
But it's all kind of just pieced itself together and I kind of I'm just going with it.
And then you get signed in 2019 by the Athletics just in time for the pandemic.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel at that point. I would feel like the world, I know it's happening to the rest of the world, but it really feels like the world is against me at this point.
Yeah. I get 1 week of spring training and I'm like a little upset. I'm like, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Like we're getting sent home. Like this kind of sucks. Like I'm ready to play baseball.
And yeah.
Goes home and I just kept doing what I needed to do. And luckily, I signed a full-on minor league contract instead
before.
Of a free agent contract.
Right.
So then I didn't get released outright.
Like, yeah.
I could have been.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just on a regular free agent contract. So okay. That in that aspect, that worked out very well for myself.
I'm told Stephen Vogt, who has he was here with the Brewers and is beloved here, not as beloved in Oakland where he had cultivated that following, but I'm told he was on a rehab assignment and he's the guy who told you that you were going to the big leagues. Is that right?
Yes.
How did that go?
So it was after an outing like a grindy outing. Like I didn't have my best stuff. I still pitched six innings, did well. It just didn't feel crisp.
Yeah.
Next couple days, yeah, I believe that was like a Thursday.
Okay.
And then maybe Friday. I don't know. I'm trying to remember those days. But get to my bullpen day, which was Saturday. So I would have pitched Wednesday or Thursday.
Sure.
And so bullpen day's on Saturday and get all my work in and everything's done. And then we have a meeting at like 5 o'clock or like something. I thought we were going to get in trouble. We did something. I thought Fran was going to rip us or something. Like,
okay.
I don't know why. That was my first thought. And then everyone's in there and Zach Logue's next to me. And he goes, I think someone's going up. I go, no. No, I don't think so. I think it's just a regular meeting.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, I think it's you. I go, no, it's not happening. It's not me. And then Voter comes in. He's just giving a speech saying he just wanted to thank us before the off day or before the Sunday because Sundays are tough to get out. And everything.
Sure.
And so he just wanted to thank us for having everything. And then just kind of went on with that. And then took a pause like he was done. And then he's like, oh, one more thing. It's really cool to be a big leaguer. And everyone's got their own different path. And then he goes, Jared Gannon, you're going to the big leagues. So I have that on video, and I'll cherish that. I haven't shared the video yet either because I'm going to hold on to that until maybe I'm done or something.
Yeah. I mean, did it? That's the only path you know, but did it, I'm sure when people react to that, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you were able to go all those twists and turns and make it. Did it feel like it was that rigorous to you, or was it, I mean, how would you describe the whole thing in total?
I would say it was very grindy at times. At the same time, when you're at the field, time kind of just goes.
Yeah.
Like, you're happy to be there. You're happy to be with a team, and you all have a common goal, whether it's a small championship like we won in 18.
Yeah.
Small in terms of grand scheme of things.
Sure, but it's important to you.
But for us and everything, like, that was everything. We got to win a championship. We got a ring. Like, that's what you strive for every year. And so I think playing there, whatever you're at, like, that's your goal, is to kind of compete and show up that same day and every day to whatever you can to benefit yourself in the long run.
Have you talked to William Contreras, your first major league strikeout victim?
I have.
You
talked
have.
To him, yes. I have not mentioned that one.
He's your catcher now, so maybe
he's
not.
He's a great catcher. I don't need to mention that until maybe later on.
That's really funny.
Yeah, he's an awesome catcher. I love throwing to him. And he's a great baseball player. So
of course,
it's a pleasure
to
share the field with him.
When you were sent down or DFA'd by Oakland last year, did that feel like a step back? Or
22.
Is it just, or 22, sorry.
Non-tendered, too.
Non-tendered. Did that feel like a step back, or was it just, you know, one more thing you got to get through? And
Honestly, I thought, I was like, all right, here's a good opportunity to get, like, a free agent contract. And it wasn't like that. It was much more difficult to get signed.
Yeah.
I didn't sign until February of 23 to
play in the minors
with the Padres. Luckily, they gave me the opportunity. And
yeah,
I mean, I was working on from the day the season ended in 22, just like any season, to get better for the next year. And so it's like, there was no doubt I was going to be better. It's just a matter of getting an opportunity. And luckily, the Padres gave me opportunity, and they couldn't guarantee me anything in AAA, which
sure.
was fine. So
yep.
I went to AA to start, and I did my job there, and then was in AAA and had a reasonable season to where I got an opportunity
in Washington.
Second day of free agency.
And just last one, what is your impression of Milwaukee so far? I mean, it's obviously worked out really nicely so far.
Yeah, it's been great. I'm very fortunate. I enjoy the culture here as a team. Everyone's very kind and pulling for everyone.
Yeah.
I truly enjoy the coaching staff, the players. Everyone's been fantastic.
All right, Jared Koenig, thank you so much, sir.
Yeah, thank you.